Well, let's see if it's going to work. Yeah. Thank you so much. And good morning to all of the Farm Bureau leaders and honored guests. We appreciate all of you being here. And we're here at our 98th annual meeting of Farm Bureau Federation. And we're just so excited about being here. So the ones of you who haven't seen me, I've come through a little cold last week and my voice has not cooperated. And I don't know how many of you told me you was going to pray for me to get my voice back, but it is so much stronger this morning than it was yesterday. So thank you for those prayers, and with God's help, we'll get through this speech. You know, yesterday I probably told a couple little lies, and I'll go ahead and admit it, get it out front of us. Some of you, I said, I can't talk. Well, they were really telling me not to talk. So if I lied to you, I apologize. The other lie I told, and I slept on it last night and thought about it, I can't help it. I told him I'd honor his word and not do it. But you know, I know a man that's in this auditorium today that gave us 16 years of his life. And I've had one of it, and I understand the sacrifice he made. Bob Stallman's here with Stacy. We got to give Bob a round of applause. Bob. Bob, sorry I lied to you. That's the only way I get you to leave me alone about it. You know, welcome to Phoenix. Everybody else in the world's freezing. Welcome to Phoenix. The Valley of the Sun. And boy, am I glad I hear, because everything around us is freezing cold. And I know you're enjoying this temperature, so thank you, Kevin, for praying this temperature in here for us. This is a season of resolutions and new beginnings, and I feel so blessed to be here with you today, giving my first annual address to the American Farm Bureau as your American Farm Bureau president. You know, it's been a long road for this old country boy, milking cows for 30 years back in Greensboro, Georgia, coming to a Farm Bureau meeting, seeing Dean Kleckner stand up here and saying, you know, I wonder if I might do that someday. But only because of all the great support I got from people like you and my good Lord and my family, and I'll talk about them in a minute. But I stand before you today just like most of you. Most of you started your leadership journey with the Farmers and Ranchers, and that's where Bonnie and I started ours. We got in the Farmers Rancher program, and we have wonderful memories of all the young people, young producers across this country that we had time to spend with. And they were the ones that had the same hopes and dreams that we had. And without Farm Bureau, I would not have had that opportunity. You know, we're just a small percentage of the population. And we was very fortunate to be able to spend that time with some very quality people of that small percentage. You know, we all work hard to feed and fuel and clothe the world. And not enough people know it and appreciate it, but it's part of our job to tell them. And we're going to talk about that too. The Young Farmer Program gave us the opportunity to connect as members of that small minority, and we really appreciate that opportunity. I certainly wouldn't be here today either if it wasn't for my family. Bonnie, where you at? Bonnie, would you stand up? Bonnie of 37 years. Bonnie of 37 years and four children. I remember coming as the young farmer chairman back in 1986. And when I left, transformers were blowing up with an ice storm. She was at home with two children at that time, two chicken houses and 150 cows. And I was not her favorite person. She's been my partner in farming. She's been my partner in life. She's been my partner in Farm Bureau. And she's definitely the better half of me. And of course, I couldn't be here today and fulfill my duties if it wasn't for my family, my children. Vince, the oldest, Corey, and Zeb and Zelly. And Zelly's with us today, and she's here with her mama. Zelly, stand up and let them see. Yeah. Zelly works in Washington, so she and I get to eat supper together once in a while. And if we don't talk about agriculture, I can buy her supper. because she works as an ag liaison with a congressman. So we're pretty real proud of her. But Zeb was supposed to be here today, but he got the sleet and snow at home, and I said, son, I just need to make sure that you see everybody shows up for work in the morning and the cows get fed and the chickens getting taken care of. Because all y'all know what happens when you leave home, and especially with bad weather. So he hates he's not here. But Zeb's the one that's home. He's a large animal veterinarian, providing that service in our community and making sure the farm continues to go. So I really appreciate them. And I was actually here in Arizona back in June. And it was a little bit different then. The average temperature back in June was 114. It was a lot nicer out there this morning when I walked over here. But I was so honored and glad to be able to get out in the countryside here. It was an eye-opening visit to an agricultural powerhouse state. President Kevin Rogers and his team arranged for me to take a helicopter ride over the irrigation project in the Salt River area. Beautiful, beautiful ride. Never ridden in a helicopter like that. It was old Huey, and it was amazing 2 hours that we spent. But it was just one of the many things that I saw on a trip, but it stuck with me. It stuck with me because it showed that farmers are problem solvers. Farmers funded this project, and today it benefits not only farmers and ranchers, but thousands of residents that seek have their residency here in this beautiful part of our country. It's yet another great example of what agriculture can accomplish when farmers and ranchers unite and to find solutions, when we can work together to assure that all of agriculture can be productive. Thanks to these reservoirs and irrigation canals across the state, Arizona is the salad bowl of America during the winter and many other parts of the year. But they're also huge producers of cattle, dairy, cotton, and many other commodities that they're so proud of. Arizona agriculture definitely was impressive to me. But I've been impressed many times. I've been very fortunate to travel this country this year, and I've been impressed by many farms that I've saw. In fact, I've visited 33 states this year. My goal as your president, in the first 2 years, I want to visit all 50 states. So I got a good start, and I'm looking for it. But the reason I'm doing that is not just to travel, because Bob will tell you over here, traveling's hard on your body. I think it's important that I come and see the people that I represent. It doesn't make any difference where you're at in this country, what region, what county, what state, what you produce, what your concerns or your opportunities are. I need to be able to go there. If I'm going to be your voice, I need to be able to get face to face with your farmers and hear their stories. Because as I spend time, going out to talk for you, I want to make sure that I can represent your story. So that's why I'm spending so much time out across America visiting with you. You know, it's difficult that those of us within agriculture, we've spent all our lives farming and ranching, but we still really don't understand American agriculture. So can you imagine how difficult it is for the people outside of farmer agriculture to understand us? They're so unconnected from the farm, and they really don't have an opportunity to that. And that's why it's so important for we as farmers and ranchers to tell our story. There's a big difference between how farmers and ranchers tell their story in Washington, D.C. with a coat and tie on than when they're standing on their farms with a tear in their eye or anger in their face, because they're standing on that piece of land that they're so passionate about. And you can see it when you're out there on their farms. And when I see that, I can take it with me and talk about it wherever I go. So it's been a wonderful opportunity for us to visit Farm Bureau members and the farmers and ranchers over the past year. I want to tell you about a few of them. Dan Bale here in Arizona. Kevin took me down to the border, southern part of the state. They was going to show me the wall, that huge wall. That huge wall ends and turns into that barbed wire fence. Dan, I tell you, it's not the wall that our country needs. It needs access to the border. Because there's hundreds of miles that he is the rancher that handles that ranch can't even get to the border. And if he can't get to it, they can't patrol it. His people are in danger sometimes. His cattle is in danger sometimes. You know, there's all kinds of issues that he has to deal with. But it's access to the border that's important. And then if you go to New York and you talk, see Judy Whitaker and her wonderful family, that dairy there. After many years, their silo was located pretty close in location to a creek. And because the EPA decides it's too close to the creek, they had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to move it up the hill. What happens when you move things up the hill? It still runs down the hill. Makes a lot of sense. Montana, northern gate of Yellowstone, where the federal government is not managing the bison there. Where there's supposed to be 900, there's 5,000. They've eaten up all the grazing lands, and they're moving outside of Yellowstone onto farmer and rancher's property. And did you know, I didn't know this, it's against the law to harass a bison or a buffalo. And now, because they haven't been managed as a herd like we do our cattle, they're infested with brucellosis. They take up residency with the cattle. Cattle get brucellosis, or the rancher has to go to all this trouble to do all the vaccination, keep it out, because they can't run the bison off. Jimmy Harris, fruit farmer in Alabama. Beautiful family, wonderful operation. But his operation is the example of so many operations across America. The one limiting factor from him growing and being the most productive he can be is ag labor, because he can't get it. His labor is his family and his neighbors. In Illinois, I went there and saw the locks and dams and the abuse and neglect that federal government's done on our locks and dams and the river system and our bridges. Our infrastructure in our country is in bad shape, and I would agree with Donald Trump about that. We have to, as he puts America back to work, we have to rebuild that infrastructure. You know, hearing these stories firsthand gives me the opportunity to bring reality to the Hill when I go visit, or when I'm talking to a Chamber of Commerce meeting somewhere else, or some other organization that's not connected to agriculture. I can bring the reality of those stories. So I want to hear your stories. I want to hear your stories so we can unite ourselves together and support each other. Because some of you from the East are not going to have heard some of the stories that I've already told or going to tell later in this morning. In addition to working together in agriculture, we must find common ground with our consumers, whether he just lives down the road or whether he lives far off in the city. We must help the consumer understand that we want the same things he wants. We want a safe, plentiful food supply. It provides national security, and it provides health for our families and our children. We want a strong farm economy. They want that too. Because American agriculture supports over 17 million American jobs. We want a wide range of food choices. This is America. We believe in freedom, freedom of choice. We want to be able to eat it, whether it's organic, traditional, genetically modified, or a mix of all of the above. In fact, farming is more sustainable than ever before. And thank you. Sustainability is a buzzword. We heard that talked about yesterday afternoon. It's a buzzword that everybody's using, and they're trying to use that buzzword to promote their products. You know, how dare somebody try to market their product on the backs of the American farmer by saying that they're going to use non-GMO products to be more sustainable? They're lying to the public. And your organization, along with 70 other organizations, called Dannon's hand on it. And we got publicity all over the country that we were not going to stand for them dragging us down in the name of sustainability. Just think about it for a minute. By using modern technology, we, the farmer, grow more crops on the same amount of land with less water, less pesticides, less plowing, and we feed more people at the same time. By developing more uses of our crops, like energy, we're making the economy more sustainable. If farmers don't take care of the land, they can't stay in business. By providing food for Americans, we're sustaining their freedom. How many of you remember several years ago when Secretary Vilsack stood on the stage at this convention in another city and said he identified agriculture with one word? That word was freedom. Because 98% of the public don't farm. The other 2% that's sitting in this room and right on our farms right now, the other 2% somewhere in America goes and gets behind a cow, goes in a chicken house, plows the fields, goes in the orchards, provides the food for all the other 98% of our population, and give them the freedom to be who they want to be, because they ain't got to be out in their backyard growing their food. We have a great story to tell, and we need to take back the concept of sustainability, because nobody works harder on sustainability than the American farmer and rancher, and that's you. Thank you. For agriculture to be sustainable, farming and ranching has to be profitable. And for us to be profitable, we got to have a sustainable supply of farm laborers. Many of our farmers and ranchers that I travel the country says, if you don't help us fix farm labor, all the other issues doesn't really matter. Without a legal supply of labor, many of our farmers face losses of crop, and they can't compete on the world market. And it's time. It's time for American people and the leaders in Washington to decide whether they're going to let us import our labor or are they going to have to import their food to the people of this country. Last spring, more than 20 farmers from 20 states with their farmers told us that they were seeing delays in getting their H-2A applications, guest worker programs, approved. There are always a lot of delays, but this last year there were more delays than normal. But the frustrating thing about it was in the Department of Labor, if you applied for an application for H-2A workers and you made a mistake or wrote a number down wrong and you did it on a computer, they wouldn't let you correct that mistake on a computer. You had to do it through snail mail, and that's ridiculous. We also heard that our government workers that normally worked on agriculture H-2A were pulled away because of the backlog at H-2B applications. That's for hotels and other businesses. Whatever the reason was, American Farm Bureau thought we had an opportunity to call attention to the problem before the crisis hit the farm and full crops started rotting in the fields and orchards. So we held an event and invited partners from state departments of agriculture, from farm bureaus, and of course we had individual farmers on the phone call. The event resulted in extensive media coverage of the labor delays and shortages. And it might just be a coincidence, but one of those farmers that was on that phone that told us a story about his delay got his fixed in about 2 days after that. Folks, that tells you about the power of a united national voice for agriculture. While we are proud to pull together people from across agriculture to bring attention to the H-2A problems, we still have a lot of work to do to fix this broken immigration system. We must have a new agricultural visa program that works for our farmers and works for our laborers. We must find a way for experienced farm workers that's been with us 10 and 15 and 20 years. They're experienced, but they're undocumented. We got to find a way to adjust their status so that they can stay on our farms. Because it's not only a safety issue. They're there. They know how to run these jobs. President-elect Trump cares about immigration reform. He's talked about it for years. And we know he wants to find a solution for it. Well, we want to find a solution too. And his team has promised me that agriculture will have a seat at the table. And we are so proud to be able to have that. So there is hope, but only if we take action. Only if our voices are heard is there hope. Mr. Trump says he wants to keep American jobs from going overseas. One way he can do that is to keep America's food production in America. Another issue that I've heard a lot about as I've visited our farmers and ranchers was the need to stop overregulation of agriculture. On this issue, just like in ag labor, many of our farmers have told me that if you don't fix this one, the rest of them's not going to matter. Because overregulation will put our farmers and ranchers out of business. Farm Bureau members worked hard, harder than anybody, to bring attention to the real impacts of the waters of the U.S. The rule would let federal agencies regulate nearly every low spot on our land, even if it doesn't hold water over a day. The rule is temporarily held up, but it looms over us like a federal land grab and a major threat to our private property rights. I'm so proud of the role that Farm Bureau played in raising this issue. Hardly anybody would have talked about WOTUS 2 years ago until we sounded alarm. And they certainly wouldn't be talking about it, still be talking about it today, without the actions of the Farm Bureau members. That is the power and influence of your national voice for agriculture. Over the past year, I've gotten firsthand look at the impacts of mismanagement of the federal lands and regulatory overreach of the federal government. In Utah, I got to see those supposed to be beautiful wild horses and burros that everybody talks about. You know, I come from the East. I've just heard about them. I've heard some of our farmers talk about what a problem they was. Well, in my mind, I just saw a beautiful wild horse running down across a grassy mountain with grass about that deep into a beautiful river knee-deep, just happy as he could be. Well, you know what? When I went to Utah, I didn't see one of them horses. I seen 100. They were inbred. They were starving to death. They were not being managed. They had disease. They had stomped their water source to the water source wasn't good anymore. And I looked at them and said, you know, if I took care of my herd of cows back at home like that, they'd lock me up. Shame on our federal government. And shame on the people giving the rest of the people in this country a misunderstanding of what really is happening out there. Our national forest. I live in Georgia. That's where my home is. It's the largest pine tree state in the country. We had the pine beetle. When I went to the West, our national forest that belonged to you and everybody else in America were dying and rotting down because of beetle. In Georgia, 90% of the land is owned by private owners, farmers. They use best management practices, and they manage themselves through the pine beetle. But because the federal government's scared that some environmentalist group's going to sue them, they don't manage our forests. They belong to all of us. And now millions of acres of timber stand and look just like that, providing fuel for the next forest fire that breaks out. And the governor you just heard, I sat in his office and he said, because of the neglect of the national forest and it had destroyed the logging industry, and he had communities after community after community that was just dying and going away because they weren't allowed to manage your trees. Then go to Massachusetts, where a lot of people live, at a cranberry farm. Never been to a cranberry farm. It was an amazing trip. Thank you, Ed. We went there, and this farmer showed me what he was doing to be productive and to be able to produce a crop and make a living in that very populated area where everything else had been developed around him. Well, when you develop land, what happens? All the little critters retreat to your farm. So the endangered species and the federal government says, well, you're the only one that's got land left, so you're going to have to set aside part of your farm to take care of the endangered box turtle. That farmer told me he hadn't seen a box turtle in 20 years. I'm going to take you to California. John Duarte, plowing his wheat field. Corps of Engineers and EPA comes by, sees him, sues him. The judge handed down a verdict says, because Mr. Duarte plowed his field, he created small mountain ranges, shifting soil from side to side, creating a point source of the pollution into the waters of the U.S. He's facing multi-million dollar penalties right now. The Clean Water Act was a good piece of legislation in the beginning. But you know, they get around these rules by just claiming that he created them small mountain ranges. So what we got to do? Makes you want to laugh. It's so ridiculous, it makes you want to laugh. But there's nothing funny. There's nothing funny about the federal government coming on, mind your land, telling us what we can and can't do on our farms. It's about federal control. It's unwarranted and it's unlawful. Farm Bureau has pushed back against federal overregulation for years, and we will continue to defend the farmers' rights. In fact, this year we had one of our largest legal victories. Our legal team won a victory over EPA because they released farmer personal information in response to Freedom of Information Act. And we were so proud of that victory. And that'll be used everywhere to protect people's personal information. So whether it's in the courthouse or whether it's on Capitol Hill, American Farm Bureau is the voice of American farmer and rancher. Those legal battles take years, and it takes millions of dollars to go through them. We got to make real progress, and the only way we're going to do that is to have regulatory reform of our process. We can't just keep cutting off the top of the weeds. We got to get right down to the root of that weed that keeps it from coming back again and again. So there is hope. I'm optimistic that making progress with this new Congress and this new president. In fact, President-elect Trump has said that regulatory reform is at the top of his agenda. So I'm going to ask you to do something today. You know, Farm Bureau always makes a difference. And I'm going to ask you to do something to help us fight this overregulation. Wouldn't it be something if thousands of American agricultural leaders that are sitting in this room today sent a message for reform in that area? So I'm going to ask you, get out your phones, because right now Congress is moving a reform bill forward, and we have a chance to help. So I want you to take your phone out, something that's going to take you less than 2 minutes to do, and yes, there is a report card. And I know I've been out there and I hate these kind of exercises, but we're trying to accomplish something. We're trying to make a difference. What I want you to do is text AFBF, create a new text to AFBF to 52886. It's on the screen behind me. Now, I did this right before I come on stage. It was real easy to do. You should all be getting a message right now of a link that you can go click on that you can complete the exercise. So you have the opportunity to send an email to your representative by filling out that short information there. And I'm hoping all of you are looking down at your phones. If you're not, I'm going to call you state out. Now, each time someone takes action, we got pens dropping. See, I told you it was a report card. Just think about it. Just think about this. Thousands of you in this room today are sending emails that is hitting Capitol Hill today. So the upper Midwest needs to get busy. Where's Alabama at? Are y'all at the football game or something? Come on. See the tally up there? 207. That's probably 5,000 people in this room. You want to make a difference? Do you really want to make a difference? Do we really believe that we're overregulated? And let's make a difference today. And I know, look at it dropping. We can do it. Need at least 1,000 up there. Don't make me wait too long. Just think of what those congressmen and the senators are going to think when they get to work in the morning. They're going to say, somebody's pumped them up. They're dropping. Look at that. I'm waiting for you to finish. Scott, did you do it? All right, who's lagging behind? All right, I like it. So, you know, this is our opportunity, and we're just dropping like flies now, so I really appreciate y'all cooperating with me, because I want those congressmen and senators to know that you were together today. Still see you looking at your phone. Look at it. We're going to hit 1,000? Where's the West at? We're in the West. Come on. Look, if somebody's sitting beside you and ain't got their phone in your hand, you know how to help him. Help him. Somebody had to help me the first time. Don't be ashamed. Look at that. All right. I'm not going to go until we get to 1,000. All right, let's go. We're getting there. Where's Nevada at? I thought Washington, Oregon was always fussing about things. Yeah. Give yourself a round of applause. You know, that just goes to show that you are powerful and influential. And I appreciate you cooperating with me, because I guarantee you somebody's going to wonder what happened yesterday. You should expect your elected leaders to listen to your decision, listen and make decisions that benefit agriculture and rural America. Rural America showed up in November. We played a big factor in the outcome of this last election. Yes. So listen to this. This election should send a strong, loud, and clear message to the politicians in Washington. You ignore rural America at your own risk. Right? Now we expect Congress and the President to listen to us and to work to help us strengthen agriculture and rural communities. And we expect to make a real difference on a wide range of issues this year. Talking about tax reform, growing our trade and exports, regulatory reform, and ag labor. But to be truly influential in rural America, we have to be united. And that's what this convention is all about. Last year, we saw impact when we all came together for one goal. In a year that Congress was more interested in politicking than legislating, we got Congress to pass a bill to prevent states and counties from creating a patchwork of GMO labeling bills. I can't tell you how many organizations, farm organizations, and food companies that called me and says, we couldn't have done this without Farm Bureau's leadership. And we succeeded because you and your willingness to make your voice heard, and you did it in a way that affected the outcome. I tell you that because I want you to be proud of the influence of Farm Bureau. But it's also because I want to show you how important it is for agriculture to set aside our differences. And don't tell me we hadn't got them. We need to set aside our differences between commodity lines, across regional lines, and across state lines. And I understand when you come from a certain area, that's difficult to do. But we got to present a united front to achieve our goal. Several members of Congress have shared with me how important it is for agriculture to unite and bring one ask. They don't want to be picking the winners and losers. They want us to have those hard discussions behind closed doors and work it out on our own. That's why we have to focus. That's why I have focused this year on making sure that I get out and build good relationships with the groups of ag leaders and commodity groups across this country. A good example of that happened last week. I had a transition team to call me through my Commissioner of Agriculture in Georgia because they was looking for a place to have a listening session for agriculture. And he said that wasn't a better place to have it than at American Farm Bureau. He called me 4 days. We had over 25 groups sitting in a room with Mr. Trump's transition team talking about the issues I spoke about this morning and more. That's how we got to work together. An issue where agriculture can work together on the future end to help our farmers survive is the Farm Bill. Congress will start debating the Farm Bill next year. And thanks to our grassroots leaders and our policy development process, Farm Bureau will be ready to lead that debate on how to make that safety net work for all of us. I look forward to seeing what the voting delegates do this week so that we can go to Congress with one ask. That's why Farm Bureau exists, so that together we can accomplish great things, things that none of us can do alone. You know, all of y'all know how much I love my Lord and how much I love the Bible. But in the Bible, Nehemiah tells us the story of the Jews working together to build a defensive wall around Jerusalem. The job was seen as immense, and people thought it was impossible to do. The invading armies even laughed. They said, well, they'll build that wall so quickly and it'll be so flimsy that just a little fox walking across it would make it crumble. But every citizen in Jerusalem stood side by side and worked together, contributing according to their skills and putting their hands to good work. They built that wall in 52 days, and they defended their city. Now, folks, I know that all of us feel like farmers and ranchers are under attack. We have to work to build up our defenses. But we don't need to build walls between us and our consumers. We need to tear those walls down. Thank you. This story about Nehemiah illustrates three ingredients that are essential to doing good work: a clear purpose and a plan, people that are passionate and willing to work hard, and a determination to get the job done. And in Farm Bureau, we got all those ingredients. Our mission is clear. Our voting delegates vote on policy and make us an outline and a plan to go by. Our grassroots are passionate and engaged. Yes, times have changed, but the character of our organization, a clear mission, grassroots passion, and determination to achieve our goals is just as powerful today as it has ever been. Your enduring values, being a united and grassroots-driven voice for all of agriculture, sets us apart from all the other organizations. Up and down the halls of Congress, respect for Farm Bureau is drawn from a deep well that goes back 98 years and counting. And I want to stand here this morning and thank you for being a Farm Bureau leader. Thank you for all your hard work in your communities and in your state and your counties to help agriculture survive. And I want you to know I am honored to serve as your president. And I want to thank each and every one of you for making me Farm Bureau proud. God bless you. God bless Farm Bureau, and God bless America.